has made an incredible progress in food production. And Iran has solved a series of issues in the food security sector and has made progress in the scientific and military fields. And also in the case of Russia, it seems that the sanctions have had the opposite effect.
Pareciera ser que el efecto fue al revés, ¿no? Es decir, hoy día.
Is there a case today that sanctions have been able to achieve the goal of overthrowing a government and changing the direction of a country?
A un gobierno a cambiar la orientación de ese estado.
Jamás, ni uno, ni uno.
Never, not a single one. There is no country in the world that has been overthrown due to Western sanctions. When I say Western sanctions, it is actually an implicit meaning that means U.S. sanctions. And then the rest of the West also follows these sanctions, but they're not the ones who impose the sanctions. I mean specifically the European Union. EU sanctions are ridiculous. For example, it's funny when Latin American countries like Nicaragua is sanctioned because Europe's trade relations with Nicaragua are very small. What does Nicaragua lose when sanctioned? What we see is that the ultimate goal of sanctions is to topple governments. Who are these sanctions against? Against all governments that do not submit their political sovereignty, resources, and political identity to the West, or in fact, America. Countries that believe that they have the right to choose their own government, as well as the right to choose the government's program, goals, and international stance, are considered enemies. How do they become enemies? A campaign is started which almost always says that those countries are violating human rights.
Se comienza la campaña diciendo que esos países casi siempre, siempre violan los derechos humanos.
Ahí vamos a quedar.
We will take a break for a few moments and then continue the second part with Fabrizio Casari.
Volvemos, estamos acá con Fabrizio Casari.
Back here we are with Fabrizio Casari. The discussion is about embargo and blockade. You were giving reasons for your own explanations. Go ahead, Fabrizio, please.
Adelante, por favor, Fabrizio.
Y lo que decía es que no haya habido ni un gobierno en el mundo.
Yes, I was saying that there is not a single government in the world that has been overthrown due to the sanctions of the United States and the West. And there is no government that will fall because of this in the future. This is a zero-sum game, and when despite the efforts of America and the West, when the desired result is not achieved, it means America's defeat. Sanctions are illegitimate because they have not been declared by any international court or the United Nations, which are the only organizations that have the authority to impose sanctions. These sanctions are illegal because they're not announced by the courts. They are announced by the offices of a ministry, and they are part of the political actions. These sanctions are unfair because the people being sanctioned have nothing to do with the government that may or may not fall. But the reality is that they hit the governments that do not surrender their political sovereignty and resources to America. Governments that do not want to determine their own political line and place in international confrontations in exchange for not being sanctioned. These countries are immediately considered by the U.S. as enemy countries, and then the U.S. says that these countries violate human rights or claim that these countries are declared an extraordinary threat to the security of the U.S. Why do they say this, despite the fact that it is a country 30,000 kilometers away? They say this, and they make management statements about it so that they later commit the most theft of resources based on these words. They must have a political justification for their robberies and looting, otherwise the law of America itself will not allow them to do so. The point is that 72% of the world's population is sanctioned by the other 25%. Can a system like this continue to work? Obviously not. Can almost 30% of the GDP be sanctioned? Because the one who used to have 60% of the production and now this figure doesn't even reach 40% of the world's gross domestic product makes such a decision. These are questions that all lawyers and people with knowledge in the world have. But in addition to some of this conversation, there's also the boomerang effect of sanctions. What will happen? When some countries are sanctioned, the United States and Europe cannot officially sell those products, and this causes their products to be stockpiled. These products expire. For one, because I remind you again, we are talking about 72% of the world's population. So when you know that you can't do business with 72% of the world's population, you can't sell anything to them. You can't buy anything from them. Your production will only be for 28% of the world's population. This amount is very, very low. So your economy will have very, very little growth and possibly negative growth. So this is what is officially on paper, while the U.S. has historically shown that it sanctions with one hand and negotiates with the other. One example is that they announced that they want to impose the biggest and toughest sanctions in history against Russia. Now, on the other hand, as a result of this action, the growth of Russia's GDP is higher than that of the European Union, which said it wanted to finish Russia's work. On the other hand, the oil and gas that reaches Europe, which they said can no longer come from Russia, still comes from Russia. It just happens that it goes through other countries, and because of that, they charge you more. So you have the same oil as before, just a little less volume, and you're paying a lot more money for it than before. And you're no longer dependent on one country, but three or four. And of course, the gas that you are going to get from the U.S., the U.S. liquefied natural gas, the amount is very small and not enough for Europe at all. And the price is much more expensive than what Russia was giving you. So what a smart person at the center of the unipolar imperial decision-making apparatus would adopt such a stupid strategy.
Cuarto decisional del imperio unipolar decide semejante estrategia idiota.
Una estrategia idiota, como dices tú, Fabricio. De cualquier manera...
A stupid strategy, as you said, Fabrizio. Fortunately, countries have been able to industrialize and ensure their own food security and develop in this direction. This is one of the consequences of sanctions. This is a very complicated matter. On the other hand, there is a very interesting phenomenon, which is the coordination, unity, and cooperation between the embargoed countries, which is a kind of resistance and building a different environment.
Que también es una forma de resistencia y de construir un espacio distinto. Mira.
Look, the nations of the sanctioned countries use their intelligence to make fun of many, or in fact, all sanctions. I remember when I was in the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, they definitely made fun of some of the sanctions. As I remember that in the period of socialist Albania, in the period between 1976 and 1986, there were large companies producing textile products, and all of their products ended up in the market with the label Made in Italy.
Telares, mucho. Y todos al final salían al mercado y estaban en el mercado con la etiqueta Made in Italia.
This means that nations have the ability to overcome sanctions and blockades in any way. What experience do you have of dealing with and passing behind sanctions?
Para superarlos. ¿Qué experiencia tú ves aquí en el desarrollo desde los pueblos para enfrentar y superar estas sanciones?
La cuestión es incrementar.
The issue is a significant increase in development of South-South relations. South-South relations should take the place of North. Today it is much easier to exchange products with any other country than it was 20 years ago. Every country can achieve a level of production of products and services. The policy of imperialism is stupid because they don't take into account that in the past, until about 50 to 20 years ago, resources were exchanged with technology and its improvements. Today, the owners of resources no longer need new technologies. Because firstly, some countries have very, very advanced technology. And secondly, if the technology doesn't reach them, there are countries that are willing to give the technology, for example, China, Russia, and Brazil itself. So what is the threat where the logic of exchange prevails? When you pay the price of my product at the international market, and if you want, you cannot do the exchange, the idea of you sanctioning me is stupid. You see, they sanctioned the Russian oil and gas pipeline to Europe and wanted to prevent Russian gas from reaching Europe. But what happened was that gas flows from Turkey and Azerbaijan and then returns here. What did Russia do? It used to have a strong trading partner, the European Union, and specifically Germany and two lines that transported oil and gas quickly and directly. For political reasons, he sold gas at a very low price. Today, it sells this gas at a relatively higher price to India and China and to other countries such as Pakistan, countries that did not buy it before. Russia started diversifying its customers and therefore has many more customers than before and is much less dependent on one customer only.
Al diversificar la cartera, a tener mucho más gente que te compra, tener mucha menos dependencia de cualquiera de ellos.
La realidad actual donde se comienza a negociar.
Today's reality is that countries are starting to do business with their own national currencies. India works with rupees, Russia with rubles, China with yuan, etc. Today, therefore, the dollar is not very decisive. How does this approach affect the possibility of circumventing or neutralizing sanctions?
En la posibilidad de sortear o burlar las sanciones.
Mira, hermano, en una forma muy fácil, es un desastre para Estados Unidos.
Look, brother, this is very easy. It's a disaster for America, because thanks to the dollar, as the only player in international exchange, America was given the ability and power in international trade to determine who sells what and who buys what and the terms of payment. And this way, it earns billions of dollars per day per transaction. This situation is not going to continue now. The dollar will no longer be the only medium of exchange. According to the predictions made in a 10-year period, the dollar will probably not be the first currency. Why? Because, as always, there's a proverb that says, idiots, in addition to being stupid, also become blind. When the U.S. tried to sanction Russia, it made it impossible for Russia to access the dollar market and the Russian account was blocked, like what they did with Venezuela in the past. Most of the countries in the international level have resources abroad for emergencies that can happen. Now, almost all strategic reserves have been in dollars. Now, there are many countries that say, if I ever get into a conflict with America for any reason, America will stop me and take all my reserves from me. No, it is better not to do this. And they are de-dollarizing their reserves. There are many countries that willingly de-dollarize their resources gradually without creating a monetary shock. And many more countries are planning to do this. Having less dollars means having less demand for dollars. Less demand for dollars means less production of dollars. Less production of dollars means that the U.S. debt cannot be paid.
Por la deuda de los Estados Unidos, la cara de impagable.
Gracias, Fabrizio. Desgraciadamente.
Thank you, Fabrizio. Unfortunately, we have reached the end of the program. Thank you very much for your participation. This is Black and White.
النقي means the pure, the immaculate, the clean. الهادي means the guide. All the imams came for guidance.
السلام عليكم يا أهل بيت النبوة ومختلف الملائكة.
Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety.
This is Dialogue, an introduction into the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam was a pure source of wisdom and knowledge. Despite his young age, he showed what divinely gifted knowledge really looks like. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the 10th divinely appointed Imam, and he was the 10th divinely appointed successor of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the son of the 9th divinely appointed Imam, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. After Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam answered with the answers of an expert the most difficult of questions posed to him by the Shia scholars and jurisprudents, the Shia leaders at that time had more faith and certainty now of what they had previously believed, that a divinely appointed Imam must have the most knowledge and he must be the most knowledgeable one of his time, regardless of whether he is young or old. And so the knowledge, virtue, and the delving into the sciences of the Holy Quran and the Sunnah of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam astonished the minds and sparked meetings and gatherings in all parts of the Muslim world. At this moment, we invite you to listen to parts of the Arabic text of Ziyarat Jamiatul Kabira by Imam Hadi alayhi salam, along with its English translation. Please stay tuned.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As-salamu ala a'immat al-huda wa masabih al-tujaw wa a'lam al-tuqa wa dawin.
In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety, the owners of understanding, the endued with thought, the havens of the peoples, the inheritors of the prophets, the perfect specimen, the most excellent call, and the arguments of Allah against the inhabitants of the world, the hereafter and the former world. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon you all.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala mahal.
Peace be upon the exponents of the recognition of Allah, the centers of Allah's blessing, the essence of Allah's wisdom, the keepers of Allah's secrets, the bearers of Allah's book, the successor of Allah's prophet, and the progeny of Allah's messenger. May Allah send blessings upon him and his household. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala al-a'immat ad-du'at.
Peace be upon the imams, the leaders, the guides, the chiefs, the authorities, the defenders, the protectors, the people of the reminder, the men in authority, the left ones by Allah, his select, his party, the case of his knowledge, his argument, his path, his light, his proof. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, this divinely appointed imam from the household of the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. So there's this very beautiful conversation that Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam has with one of his companions. And it's interesting, the companion was kind of asking about various different things, and eventually we find that in responding to the companion, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, he starts to talk about these very central and universal, I guess, realities, if you will. The beauty about the divinely appointed imams is that, you know, they spoke in such a profound manner, and their words themselves were so profound, you know, and I guess it's something that's not too strange when you take into consideration the fact that they were connected with the Almighty Allah, and the Almighty Allah, of course, being the source of knowledge and wisdom. So this is, you know, it's not strange that they said such profound and immaculate words. And so we find that in this conversation, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, he says that the ways that Allah has forbidden are the ways of Iblis, the ways of Shaitan, and the promise of eternal bliss is that which is in paradise. You know, and even though this conversation continues, but even these two small statements are something which are really profound, you know. There's something that, well, one can really reflect and think upon, and it is an interesting reality of the universe and of the cosmos. This idea that, you know, the ways that Allah has forbidden are the ways of Iblis, the ways of Shaitan. And so, you know, who is Shaitan? Shaitan, of course, is this rebel who has rebelled, who has transgressed against the commandments of the Almighty Allah in a very brazen and overt manner. You know, when despite praying and worshiping Allah for thousands of years, you know, when it came to a serious test and when it came to paying obeisance to Prophet Adam alayhi salam, we find that Shaitan openly and brazenly, he opposed the Almighty Allah and opposed him, you know, right in his face, metaphorically speaking. You know, it wasn't something that was very hidden or very internal. No, it was quite brazen and arrogant. So this idea that the ways of Shaitan are the ways that Allah has forbidden all of us from doing, you know, and it kind of, you know, lets you understand and lets you realize that Allah does not forbid things for no reason. The reason that Allah forbids us from certain things is because they are ways which lead to humiliation and shame and down this dark path in which there is only pain and suffering involved. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/en Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many other great programs as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you because you are
a Muslim lady.
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Muslim Ladies. Well, once again, I have the honor and the pleasure to be here as your host. This is Asma, of course. And here with me, I have the pleasure to sit with Sister Nahid. She's a researcher on women's study. And then let her talk about herself. So, assalamu alaikum, sister.
Assalamu alaikum to you and all your dear listeners. This is Nahid, and I'm so honored to be with you today.
Thank you for my coming pleasure. Here. Just for the audience to know you more, since we're ladies and we're talking to each other, so maybe some people are there who do not know you, very briefly introduce yourself.
Yeah, I've been doing some researches on women issues, and especially dealing with the Islamic women and the kinds of challenges and the issues that they may face in a society.
Thank you for sharing that with us, sister. In Muslim Lady, we talk about everything that is related to women. And as you already know, there are a huge list of issues and topics to talk about. Like, you know, women have got a lot of things to talk about. We are detailed creatures, so we have a lot of things to study. But there is one very specific part to their life, which is very, very important, and that's about marriage. Like, as in you know, marriage is not just a cliff or a bridge that you can hastily jump off of it. And it has got to be based on knowledge, based on maturity, based on thinking. And I'm sure there are a lot of factors out there, as in Islamic perspective, to go on and focus on them and highlight them for all the ladies out there who are on the verge of getting married or just they're thinking about it. From an Islamic perspective, Let's talk on what are the factors of a perfect marriage?
You know, first of all, let me start by mentioning this issue that in not considering given Islamic context, We have too many stereotypes about women regarding marriage. Like, we can start by mentioning that sometimes the fact that women need to be knowledgeable enough, women need to have their voice up when it comes to marriage. These kinds of facts are just being taken for granted, and nobody cares about these issues. Mm-hmm. And first of all, and I guess first and foremost, we should mention that women are supposed to know before, like they should be educated enough. They should be able to talk, like they should be able to have their opinions straight.
Yeah.
And then we can also talk about the factors that the factors are kind of two-sided. They are related to both men and women, but I still believe that first and foremost, we should notify women that they are supposed to be educated, they are supposed to have their voice up, because sometimes the stereotypes that are neither Islamic nor even humanistic, these stereotypes are kind of hurting women in the society.
What kind of education you mean? Because just as you bring in that up, maybe a lot of other details are going to pop up in our brain. So let's go for a short break, and then we'd come back to see what kind of education do we need to have as women before marriage? Yes, to marry is is actually to get into too much of details, and you have to focus on different aspects of your personal and social life. So, yeah, this is Muslim Ladies. Welcome back. Sister Nahid and I were talking about the factors that are actually so important for women to focus upon before marriage. It's not just for women, it's for both men and women, but since we're talking about ladies, so it's naturally pretty obvious that we're going to focus on their own important ideas and issues. So what kind of education were we talking about?
The thing that I'm talking about is that it's very sad that even these days in a modern society, in a society at which people are just improving and they are not having those traditional, old, sometimes wrong views, mm-hmm. we still have some families, some traditional families who are kind of limiting women and girls from being educated enough for different aspects of their own life. I'm not talking about like education and going to university, work and this stuff, because mm-hmm. they're a whole different issue that can be mentioned. But I'm rather talking about the fact that women and girls should be educated about marriage. They should know what they are going to go through. They should know about the big decision they're going to make, because that decision is going to kind of change their whole life.
Of course, it's a drastic change, and they must be very much prepared for it. And for the kind of education that you were talking about, yes, you're very right. I guess whenever I just come to think about marriage, as in generally speaking, I would come to this point that marriage is just like getting into too much of issues. Like you're going to enter a world that previously you never thought of, because when you're on your own, things are pretty much different. So I think marriage is mostly based on mutual relationship, like a mutual understanding.
Girls and women should have the information, and shouldn't, like, these days in some societies we are monitoring a lot of divorce rate, which
of
is
course,
not a good thing.
And maybe, and unfortunately, let me just add this point, most of them are educated people.
Yeah.
Like, they are well educated, they're coming from well-bred families, like...
you know what I see in these situations is that that girl or that woman is educated enough based on the academic studies, but even that person is not knowledgeable enough about marriage, like about the thing that is going to happen to them.
Psychologically speaking, we have to come to an understanding of the opposite gender.
Definitely.
Like, you have to understand their own mentality, not just looking in your own perspective.
Exactly. It's actually like getting out of your own comfort zone, getting out of your own brain, and trying to put yourself in someone else's shoes, and then look at life and see if you're going to be compatible with that person.
And not just everyone, you know, this other gender has got a lot to share. Like, I mean, you have to know a lot about them. It's not like, okay, see, for women to understand each other, it's pretty much easy because we know how we think, how we look at things, but to think in a place of a man, that's pretty much different. Like, you need to go for education. With education, I mean the study and the maturity about how they're going to look at life. And to do that, you actually have to read books. You have to... I don't think at universities they would teach you such a stuff.
No, not universities, but we can just... we can have some classes, some special classes. Mm-hmm. We do have some classes before marriage, like marriage preparation classes.
Exactly.
But they are very rare, and people are not supposed, like, they're not obligatory. They're mm-hmm. optional, and a lot of,
and
it's very
everybody
sad
skips them.
Exactly. A lot of couples just skip these classes.
Yeah. So that's very interesting. We still are just getting into the topic. So as you can see, just we open up this box of worms, there comes a lot of issues related to it. So this is just maybe the introduction. Let's go for another break, and then we'll be back for the wrapping up part. Like, we're going to give the gist of whatever we've been through. Thank you for staying with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
guess this is the last part of today's episode. Thank you for being with us. This is Muslim Lady, and we're actually talking about marriage and the important factors to think about, to emphasize, to focus upon, just as you are about to enter this new world from, of course, an Islamic perspective.
We have too many hadith and we have too many narrations and even verses of Quran that are mentioning the fact that both the man and the woman are supposed to be compatible. In our own Iranian culture, we say that like the girl and the boy should match each other, or they should complete each other.
Yeah.
And I guess this really matters. It's not something that we can just say and don't think about it, but rather we are supposed to think, like, is that person, is that partner supposed to
my
complete
other
me?
Part?
Exactly. Is that
is
person
he or
going to be my
she
soulmate?
The other half of me? Exactly. Are they going to be my alter ego?
And it's really important. Like, they should be from the same walks of life. Like, they are going
exactly.
to be completing each other.
Birds of the same feather.
Exactly. And if it's not happening, I guess the life is not going to be successful. They're not going to have a good life, because if two people are just from two different worlds,
exactly.
how can you put them next to
yeah.
each other and ask them to live forever? And this kind of life, I don't guess it's going to happen. Like, how can we put two people from two different social classes even?
You know, the way you even define things must come together. I don't mean that people must be just alike, because sometimes your other half is going to be exactly the reverse of you in order to complete you. And they're going to be perfect matches.
Yeah,
so
it's not possible to have two people just like each other.
Exactly,
but at least
yeah.
we can have them like being in the same way of life, like having the same goals or similar goals. Like
exactly.
it shouldn't be like if one partner wants to, I don't know, immigrate, and the other one is just devoted to the country and wants to stay. So these two people
yeah.
don't share any common goals to start a life with.
Exactly. Yeah, these are very important. Like, it's about how you define life, how you set your goals, and actually there are a lot more of details, and it's both interesting and sort of scary.
Yeah, sure. It gets scary at the point at which, like, young people are not thinking about this sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, right now we can see that a lot of young girls are just not most of them, but a lot of them are just waiting for a rich man who can come and just marry.
Come on.
But yeah.
And it's the same for
at the
boys
same time
as
boys.
Well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. They also
boys.
Are waiting
exactly.
for this dreamy
for a girl
doll
who has her own
CC.
Work.
She must
comes.
Be a doll.
Exactly.
And at the same time, she must be rich.
Yeah.
They don't have to do anything.
So beautiful, I
yeah.
don't know, rich, with
yeah.
a good family.
A princess. A princess with all the privileges,
yeah, and, that
and
is
they
sad.
Do nothing.
Yeah, and that is so sad.
So sad, unfortunately.
Our young generation
mm-hmm.
are not just, they're not working for themselves. They're
exactly.
sometimes waiting for the opposite sex to come and change their life.
But life is not about that. I mean, marriage
no.
is way more beyond that. It's not like as simple as that, as superficial as that.
Yeah.
It's not about the material world. It's about two souls completing each other. Well, if I want to wrap up what we were just saying, we just went through the introduction part of marriage, of the important factors to get into a perfect and healthy marriage from an Islamic perspective. Of course, there's a lot to it, and this episode is not going to cover it up. The highlights of today's episode, if I want to mention, are the awareness that girls must have, since we're talking about ladies. And this awareness does not come out of nowhere haphazardly. No, you have to educate yourself for it. You have to go through a lot of study. You have to think. And this thinking process is not an easy thing to happen. And after that, when we start to count the factors of a perfect marriage, we come to this point that compatibility is one of the major and the most crucial part of a decision towards marriage. Like, the person you're going to pick must be compatible to the way you think, to the way you're going to define your future and set your goals for the upcoming future. So I hope you enjoyed it. This was all for today's episode. Thank you for staying with us. Until another session, I just bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting. for something, something to happen to me. But this waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Hi, I am Javad Qarai, an Iran trotter.
I think Iran is a unique country, and I'm supposed to award you with the beauties of my beloved country and my trips to the most pristine places in Iran, a country I wholeheartedly feel proud of. Many people in the world consider Iran as a desert country because it's located on the dry belt of the earth. They don't have the right image of the beloved Iran. Undoubtedly, a major part of Iran consists of vast and, of course, impressively beautiful deserts, but the fact is about 55% of Iran consists of mountains, and we can see that Iran is a mountainous country where the Alborz and Zagros are the most remarkable mountain ranges in the unique country. Alborz Mountain Range is very crucial as it houses the gorgeous Mount Damavand and the 40 million year old Hyrcanian forests in the north. And the Zagros Mountain Range stands out in western Iran due to its dense oak forests as well as numerous rivers and waterfalls. This time, I've traveled to a part of the Zagros mountain range in Delfan in Lorestan province, a region that enjoys ancient culture and art besides its unique nature and is home to passionate people who speak in Lakhi. Oh, what a place. It's like a blade and has a low altitude. But I never take a risk. If I want to walk in the mountain and reach a point, I'll try to choose the easiest path, not the fastest or shortest one. Because when you're traveling in nature or climbing a mountain, the easiest way will save your life, but short paths can be dangerous. I'm sure I can pass through this path, although it is steep and there are thin layers of stone. Those places are a little risky, but I know that I can. When I'm not sure if I can pass or not, there's no way I'll take the risk and take that path. This place is good. The stones stick together like thin layers, and they've created a very beautiful shape. But at the same time, it involves a great deal of risk. Look how beautiful it is, and of course, dangerous. I have to be careful I don't slip. Oh, look at the other side. It's an abyss. But I trespass this tree's territory. I'll pass by it without causing any damage to it. Oh, it was a very steep path. This is Zagros, with many steep mountains and deep valleys. Oh God, what a scenery. I've seen many oak trees in Zagros in different provinces, but what makes the oak forest in Delfon in Lorestan province stand out is the color of its soil. It's red. The green trees and red soil have created astonishing scenery. I think this place is like paradise for photographers. In any moment of the day, in the morning, at noon, or at sunset, the beautiful nature of Delfon gives you a great scene from different angles as a gift. Thank God I managed to come here. It was worth it. Persian literature, Zagros is a symbol of resistance and steadfastness by the people who live among the hard stones and have learned very well how to overcome their problems. The men and women in the Lor, Kurd, and Khashgai tribes work hard side by side in the Zagros Mountains from the northwest to the south of the beloved Iran in order to earn their daily sustenance. They've created many stories at the heart of the tough mountains. They've memorized every line of the stories and have passed them down from generation to generation. They've told many stories at the heart of Delfon since thousands of years ago. Some people say Delfon is a land that is under spell because many wars have broken out in this place along the tortuous paths, and as the locals say, the mysterious mountains in Delfon were considered by the people in the past as the best place to bury their valuables. And some local people believe that Noah's Ark landed in this region. But whether that claim is true or false, hearing them by the locals made the trip doubly interesting for me. For me, if there is a treasure in this place, it is undoubtedly the mesmerizing nature of Delfon, which has cast a spell on me with its beauty and had dragged me all the way here. Considering the archaeological discoveries in the Khatunban and Dashtakave areas, it is an established fact that the ancient residents of this breathtakingly nice region were among the first people in the world who tamed horses. Unearthing a device named bridle made by bronze in some of the ancient graves in this region proves the fact. But the interesting thing that's discovered in the graves is that the bridle of some of the horses were under the head of their owners in their burial place. A cemetery for horses has been discovered next to this ancient cemetery, which is adjacent to the cemetery where humans were buried. If the rider died before the horse would be buried in that cemetery next to the owner. The red hills of Delfon, along with the flowers, plants, and purple and oak trees, created the scenery in the spring that can be seen in few places in the beloved Iran. But besides all the beauty and the generosity of nature, seeing the traces of destruction of Mother Nature by people ached my heart. Oh my God, look how splendid this tree is. How old do you think this tree I'm honored to stand next to is? This tree is over 500 to 600 years old. In fact, oak is a tree characterized by longevity. It takes a very long time for it to grow this big. Unfortunately, there are no trees besides these two on the farm you see behind me. There was a time when this place was dotted with old oak trees. I continue the trek toward Mount Mehrab, hoping the remaining oak trees in Zagros will be preserved. Zagros has abundant flora, and if we're a little lucky, we can see rarely found plants that not everyone gets the chance to see in their lifetime. And I was very lucky on this trip. This rare flower, and in fact this plant, is a member of the Calla Lily family. It is rarely found in Iran. It is mostly spotted in the western Zagros in scattered areas. In Farsi, this black, or I'd better say aborigine flower, is called baharak, or spring, because it only blossoms in the spring. The flower has a very bad odor. The locals call the plant kalakak, or small raven. It has an eye-pleasing metallic color. If you touch it, it feels like a donkey's ear. It is thick and velvet, but the smell is a repellent. The very beautiful plant stinks because it draws the flies. Many flies sit on the plant. The smart plant attracts the flies so it can pollinate and survive the next generations. When we walk in nature or climb the mountain, we have to watch our steps so we won't harm the plants. This plant, which is very rare in our beloved country, is at risk of extinction because of mountain climbers. We might push a species into extinction just because of our careless attitude. It's very beautiful, but the smell is really a nuisance. It stinks. I have to immediately leave this place. Nature is a symbol of God's beauty and elegance. It's always beautiful one way or another in any shape it is, but mountains are always glorious within nature and have been especially attractive for nature lovers. Usually high individual mountains like Damavand or Sabalon are elegantly outstanding compared to mountain ranges. But here in Lorestan's Delfon, there are two mountain ranges, named the Greater and Lesser Mehrab mountain ranges, that are undoubtedly as gorgeous as individual mountains.